I want to welcome you to the program today. I am so happy to have with me Mara Katria, and you're going to learn a lot about her as this program goes on. Now, this was an interview that I did with Mara via Zoom, and it first aired on WIOX Community Radio. And as I have done many times, turn this into a podcast. So, we're going to jump right into the interview and my discussion with Mara Katria. I am so pleased to welcome Mara Katria to the program today. Hi, Mara. How are you?
I'm so good. I've been so looking forward to talking with you and seeing with you. Such a bonus. What a great day.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Same here. You are a filmmaker. You're a musician. There's so many aspects to what you do. And I'm kind of thrilled to talk with you today because of that. So let's talk about Mara Katria. First of all, you grew up, did you grow up in the Hudson Valley or?
Okay. I sure did. Yeah.
Okay, so talk about that.
Oh, I love the Hudson Valley. I love really all of New York State is such a beautiful place to grow up. In fact, if you see my video background here, this is a rainbow from a waterfall at a state park here in New York. And I think that really reaches into the heart of what I take away from my childhood in New York. I grew up on a small lake, nothing crazy, but it was called Winona Lake. And I was always inspired by the sun rising over those waters, the way that it would sparkle. Just, it stays in my memory. It resonates always. And also, it's such a creative area. You've got this wonderful spectrum of people from different backgrounds, different creative backgrounds, different working backgrounds. Of course, you're only a couple hours from New York, or maybe 1 hour from New York, depending on what part you're in as far as the city goes. So there's so much energy and so much nature and so much beauty. I was really, really grateful even as a kid. I think I knew I was growing up in a really lovely area and a lot of freedom to express yourself in lots of weird ways. I think of myself as kind of a weirdo, as I think we all do in a way. And I was very blessed to be around people who were okay with that, if that makes sense. The Hudson Valley Conservatory is in Walden and led by Samuel Wright, who played Sebastian the Crab in The Little Mermaid, and he played Mufasa in Broadway's The Lion King. And he encouraged the best out of his students as far as being themselves. And I have so much hope for that.
And where did the music enter into the picture?
Well, the professional music a bit later on, but when I was a kid, I'll tell you very briefly that I would go out to the lake, and for some reason in my head, I was just the only one out. There was a small lake. I could have easily been seen by anybody, but I always really performed really big out to the lake and to the sky beyond. But I started my career with acting. I got a couple of scholarships to the Hudson Valley Conservatory of Fine Arts, and then I started directing voiceover work for video games after that, for The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, for any nerds out there, which I love and adore. And so when I was directing the voiceover work, I also was doing the video game programming for the artificial intelligence and for some of the characters, the world building. And in that, I sort of made this connection into music, which I had already loved my entire life. And I did the score work for that video game expansion adventure, all of these really magical tunes. And the idea was to get people to experience something, to totally immerse themselves in an emotion, in a concept, in a moment. And I was already hooked, but if I wasn't already, I was 100% all in with the music once I started working on that video game. And so I directed a film after that, a feature length film, Please Talk With Me, about a haunting that happened here in Western New York in 1985.
I want to talk about that.
Oh, sure.
A little in depth. But before you even get to that, you did the score work for, where did you learn to write music?
I am what some people around me like to call, but I feel uncomfortable saying, as an autodidact. I really like to pick things up by doing. I feel very blessed to live in a day and age when we have access to things like YouTube and lynda.com and all these sort of learning resources. And so when I was a kid, I had a keyboard and I learned how to play that. Not that I'm a virtuoso, but I think I'm pretty competent. And then guitar as well, and a little bit of xylophone and things. So I really, even in junior high school, I remember making these sort of new age, sort of beautiful to me anyway, soundscapes with lots of big synths and lots of gentle and velvety layers and things like that. So I was already sort of moved towards the score aspect of making immersive music like that. So when I started working on the video game mod, it was a no-brainer because I already had all the equipment. I already had the capability, I think, and the passion for it.
That is absolutely amazing. That how old were you when you did this?
The expansion mod was when I was, I think, 23 or something like that. Not too young.
You don't look much past that right now. So, but okay. So you did this, and in the progression of things, what came next for you? Was it the song, or go ahead?
Oh, it's such a great question. Thank you for asking it. And again, thanks for that beautiful poem at the beginning of your show. What a lovely honor for the veterans, and thanks for doing meaningful things. You really make a difference, and you're a great person. So I just want to get that in there. Just talking about myself. Talk about Artie. As far as the musical transition, the mod really ended up being a big transition into music, not only because I started working on music with it, because it also led to that film. And so when I directed Please Talk With Me, which was produced by a great guy, William J. Edwards, Cedar Productions, and Christy Cesare wrote the script. And I remember, like I said, this is a true story of a haunting. And I know you want to get into the idea of the haunting a little bit, so this will connect nicely into why the music.
That intrigues me, that's why, but go ahead.
I received these journal notes. It was a photocopy. It was about maybe 25 pages of handwritten, hand-scrawled journal notes, and they were from 1985, and they were signed every page by this guy named John Jeff Ungar. And so reading this, I learned about this haunting that happened to these kids, a group of kids in New York at a college, SUNY Geneseo, in 1985. And it doesn't necessarily matter whether you believe in ghosts or not. It really struck me how this extreme set of paranormal occurrences, they changed these kids' lives. They had to question themselves, their friendships, religion. This was the course of months during this bleak winter when these things happened. And I was really moved by the friendships that this John Jeff Ungar character was writing about his friend Chris was going through. And I knew that I wanted to create a story with it. And John Jeff Ungar, I reached out to him and he said, I don't know what notes you're talking about. I have no memory of this. I said, well, let me send you this photocopy that I have and you see if you remember. And so he and I had a telephone call and he said, oh my God, I had blocked this out. I had put this behind me. I had moved on from this. The trauma of it had been so extreme for him that he had put it all the way out of his mind for the longest time, which is fascinating in and of itself. But the other thing that is just a silver lining in the clouds is I was listening to this guy and I thought, wow, he's got a really cool voice, like Kevin Costner and Dances with Wolves. It's that kind of a voice. And I said to him, you know what would be beautifully authentic for the film? And I want it to be authentic. I want it to be respectful to the people who went through this, would be if you would do the narration, the voiceover work for this film so that people watching it could get a real feeling for the real people who went through this. And he said yes. And the film was a wonderful, meaningful success for all of us. I can go into detail later if you want, but just to fast forward a little bit, after the film is done and we have our publicity tour, I became good friends with Jeff. I became best friends with Jeff. And then a year later, We started dating and now we're married. He turns to me about 2 years ago and he says to me, Mara, the band Modern English is putting together a new album with the original lineup for the first time. These are the guys who sang that I'll stop the world and melt with you. And I said, oh my gosh, that's amazing, Jeff. The way I learned about your character when I began this film, I was told by your friend, Krista Cesare, if I want to learn about Jeff, I must read the book Pride and Prejudice, and I must listen to the song I Melt With You by Modern English. Mm-hmm. The fact that he was saying this to me was, I have chills. Oh my gosh, I have chills thinking about it. It's like, this is kismet somehow. And he said, brace yourself for this. If we help them with their new album, maybe they would make some original music with you, Mara. And so I reached out to their management and I talked with them, and having supported their great new album, Take Me to the Trees, we are now creating an original album together of 5 songs that I've already written with my friends and now my heroes, really, Modern English. And so that really connects with why I'm all in, especially on the music now, because I get to work with my friends and my superheroes, Modern English.
Absolutely. So I want to talk more about Modern English and the song that you had recorded, Midnight Mind. But before we do that, you also recorded another song. You did a cover, and it won an award, I believe. And I'm speaking of the song
The Dark Night of the Soul.
The Dark Night of the Soul, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about that and what made you cover it. I think it's a beautiful song and a beautiful interpretation. So just tell me about that song.
Thank you so much. I'm honored by you saying that and by taking the time. When I was a kid, I was a huge fan of many people, including the heroine herself, Lorena McKennitt. And what a genius, I thought at the time. I love Prince, and he is and was a genius. And I always thought, why don't we talk about Lorena McKennitt in a similar fashion? She's so incredible on so many instruments. She's so insightful with the way that she has different backgrounds for the songs and connects with history. I was just blown away by that. And many people are a fan of her, but I don't know that she gets quite as much credit as she deserves. At any rate, I always wanted to do a cover of hers. And I do covers very sparingly because I think there's only 2 real reasons to do a cover. One, if you think you can improve on it, which I do not think I can do. She's a genius. And the other, to truly pay homage to it. If you have something to inject in it that people maybe haven't heard yet, out of your true love for that song. And I reached out to my great friends, Rose Baldino and Brian Buchanan, amazing musicians in House of Hamel, the band, as well as Enter the Haggis and Burning Bridget Cleary, all Celtic folk, great stuff from Pennsylvania, New York, regional areas like that. They're so fantastic. And I said, I want to do this, but I want to take it all the way. I want to make something that's meaningful and beautiful, not just to throw away. And they were amazing to work with. Just they really understood my vision for the song right away. I shared a lot of different visual media with them because this is during the time of COVID. We couldn't meet up. This was really, we started getting to work on it, I think, in August or July when we began work. So there was no getting together. So it was a lot of Zoom meeting. It was a lot of sending of different audio files and video files. So I think really found a way to utilize the technology in a way that brought us together as if we were live, or maybe even better. I'm very proud of our team of people for creating it. And my interpretation of it's a little bit slower. It's very much Lord of the Rings inspired, per my penchant. And the great engineer Clyde Rosencrantz from the Steamtown area of Pennsylvania, he mastered the track just gorgeously. I'm so proud of it. But the thing that makes me crazy about it is if I do a cover, I always try to use a golden rule. And I think, well, if I created original music, I'd like to know if somebody were going to cover it. And so I never expect to hear back from somebody, but I reached out to Lorena McKennett and I reached out to Quinlan Road and said, you know, here's our master of a track that I have recorded, and it's in honor of you, and I hope you don't mind if we put it out there. And I actually heard back from Lorena McKenna and Quinlan Road, and they said how much they enjoy and love this version. What a dream come true. Wow. To hear back from Lorena herself and Quinlan Road to say that this has definitely got her gold thumbs up of approval. So. Upon a darkened night, the flame of a love was burning in my breast, and by a lantern bright, I fled my house while all in quiet rest. Shrouded by was
face upon my lover's breast, and care and grief grew dim as in the morning's mist became the light. And there they dimmed amongst the lilies fair. There they dimmed amongst the lilies fair. And there they dimmed amongst the lilies fair.
Marika Trio with Dark Night of the Soul. Let's continue on with the interview. And that tune was a great cover, and Mara did discuss it, and just simply beautiful. Now, you did the arranging on that song, and as far as the musicians that played with you on that, who was that?
On fiddle, we have Rose Baldino and Brian Buchanan. They are actually a married couple, which is very meaningful for the music and that intertwining romance. And Brian Buchanan also on the Spanish guitar. And then the special effects and vocals, obviously, and harmonies are myself.
Great. Absolutely beautiful. So, all right. So let's talk about this scary movie. And then we're going to get to the other song. And I have one other thing I want to talk to you about. But let's talk about the movie and, you know, what it's about, where people can get it. And also, by the way, how do people, if they want to get any of your music, what's the best way of doing that?
I think there's two really fun ways to do it. My favorite is always to have a hard copy. So if you are retro like me, you can go to my website, which is marakatria.com. It's MaraKatria.com. And there's ways to buy a physical copy. I have DVDs of them. I have cool photo packets. I love to do signings and little poems and things and personalize. And I keep the cost very low because I'm the world's worst salesman. So there will be no price gouging. But obviously, people can go onto iTunes and Spotify and Amazon and all those regular places. And as it happens, since we are doing Catskills Cafe, which is so awesome for my roots, I am going to be in Fishkill, New York, I think on the 16th, for a paranormal, socially distanced meetup, which will feature the film itself. And then people can meet me if they want to, or the witnesses to the film, and have a nice, safe time there. That's November 16th. And it is at the 84 Diner for Ghost Magnets with a Twist. So if they Google that or they go on Facebook, okay, they can find you there.
Talk about this. You know, I am not people who know me know that I don't believe in any of this stuff. But I, you know, I certainly respect I'm inquisitive about it. And the more I learn, you know, maybe I'll change my mind. I might be too old to change my mind at this point, being a proponent of James Randi, who just recently passed. And I followed Randi all through my life and some of the things that he exposed. And I'm also an amateur magician. So I do know a lot about mind reading and cold reading and things like that, you know, how psychics tell people what they're thinking. Perfect example is that somebody once said, told me that, oh, they were listening to a psychic at a meeting, and the psychic looked out and said, is there somebody out there? I'm getting the letter J. I'm getting the letter J. And of course, you know, to make a very long story short, J is a very easy thing to start off with because the most popular name is James, and followed by John, you know. So you're pretty much going to get a response from even a small group of people, you know. So psychics have their tricks. But as far as ghosts go, well, tell me about this movie.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think that's such a healthy way of looking at it, Artie. I think that we should all come from a perspective of kind skepticism. You know, we don't want to have the wool pulled over our eyes and go blindly. So I think that is admirable. And I too come from a point of view of skepticism myself, although I have no skepticism when it comes to the witnesses. As I said, when I read those journal notes, it didn't matter whether the ghost was real or not. The fact that they went through something and that they were able to turn to each other and come through it with grace and decency, it just made me feel hopeful for humanity. As far as the spooky stuff, since we are still kind of near Halloween, I can say that in the winter of 1985, a college student named Chris DeCesare was writing a paper in his college dorm room. And he, it was the old fashioned type of typewriter where you push the key. And back then you couldn't erase anything. You had to go back and write the whole paper again. Very diligent process. And, he was working hard and he heard somebody say his name, Chris. He said, okay, you know, fine. Don't bother me right now. I'm trying to finish my paper. I don't need this sort of thing. He's in a dorm room. People play jokes all the time. So he went back to his work, and he continued on typing and typing. And he hears it again. Chris. A little bit of time goes by and says, you know what? That sounds strange to me. Whoever you are, I don't know if you're on the other side of the wall, if you're outside of my window, I want you to cut it out. And he goes back to writing his paper, and he thinks, you know what? I'm going to get the one up on them. They want to play a joke on me. I'm not going to even listen. I'm going to take my headphones, put them on. I'm going to blast. I think it was the song, I Can't Drive 55. It's like really loud rock music into the headphones, continues his paper. He feels like a hero. And he hears in the headphones over the music, Chris. He panics at this point because that shouldn't be possible. It shouldn't be able to occur. And he runs out of his dorm room door and starts banging on his neighbor's door. I can't believe I panicked. Jeff, are you in there? And here's Jeff, my current husband, who I didn't know at the time when I was creating the film. And Jeff, he was like you, Artie. He was intrigued. He wanted answers, but he wasn't a person that was ready to just embrace the paranormal willy-nilly. And he certainly had the same kind of healthy skepticism with regard to psychics and things like that. I think that's really smart that you think that way. Not that it matters what I think. And so he hears his friend. His friend was a college room runner. He got a scholarship for that college. He was a real solid dude, Chris. And he heard his friend panicking. And he thought, you know what? It doesn't matter whether I believe him or not, it's that he believes it. He looked in his eyes when he opened that door and he saw the fear and thought, whatever I can do, I'm going to help this person. And Chris said, I think I'm going crazy. I think that this is something that must be going on in my mind. I want you to take down these journal notes, write them down. And if I spiral into madness, I want you to keep this account and give it to the doctor so that they can diagnose me, whatever this is that's going on. Now, the thing that he didn't want to find out, the thing that neither of them wanted to find out, was that this started to spread throughout the campus and affect about a half a dozen college students independently. They started calling the ghost Tommy, and they had these manifestations and small things happening, bodiless apparitions, cold spots, things like that, classic things that you hear. Of course, it's important to mention that this was 1985. This was not 2020 when you have ghost hunters on the TV and you got My Paranormal Experience, this and that thing. It's very fun and cool right now, apparently, to have the paranormal. But back then, that was demonic. That was taboo. You didn't talk about the paranormal back then. You wouldn't be proud of that. So people were trying to keep things on the hush-hush, but it got extreme. It got extreme for them. And one day, Chris was taking a shower. And he was trying to get this haunting out of his mind. He was trying to get back to running again, getting back into his scholarship. And he saw a shadow pass over his head as the water fell down. And he said, you know what, whoever you are, you know, I'm not going to have you playing jokes on me, still wanting to believe that this wasn't happening. And then he saw a shadow pass underneath his feet. And he's like, well, it can't be above and below. And he gets ready to swing. He thinks somebody's going to try to attack him, and he punches out. And then he's victorious. He kills the almighty shower curtain, and it falls limp on the floor. There's nothing there. And he says, who are you? What are you? Why are you doing this to me? He can't hold on to reality anymore. There's no rules of engagement at this point. How do you sort through something when you don't know the rules? He turns around, and as he turns, something, whether it's a hand or a beast or something like that, there's a lot of theories, reached out, scratched him across the back. He collapses. Later on, having heard the commotion, J. Jeff Ungar, he comes in and he sees his friend bleeding on the floor, and picks him up, dries him off, and brings him back into the dorm room with a friend of his named Ed, who in the film we tried to portray this as well as possible, and having talked to all the witnesses, says, oh my God, this is real, isn't it? He was a person who definitely didn't want to believe. And again, I'm not trying to tell you the paranormal is real, Artie.
But
I love the kids and what they experienced at 19 years old, 20 years old, when there was no rule book. I'm so proud of them for being good people.
Now, where can people get to view this film?
I think a really great place, again, to do that would be my website, but they can also go to ptwmthefilm.com and they can buy a copy there. And then I don't know, this is super secret stuff, so this is one of the first times I'm mentioning it, but having won some awards for it, I've been encouraged to do a director's cut within the next year or two, and I've reached out to some additional witnesses that experienced it. And once we do that, I believe that we'll be releasing on either Amazon or Netflix, something like that. Wow. So if people don't want a physical copy, they want it digitally in the next year or two, I think that'll be
Looking forward to seeing this movie. Whatever it is, it is fascinating.
Now, it's got great music.
Followed all of the conspiracy theories and things like that, so I'm pretty malleable and easily fooled in a lot of respects, or I wouldn't be a magician. I like to be fooled, but I do have, as you say, a strong skepticism. I subscribe to Skeptic Magazine, but again, you know, there are things out there that none of us know about that we can't explain. So I'm pretty open to anything. And I do look forward to seeing this movie.
That's called being a kind, great person, as you are, Artie. Thanks for being an inspiration. Yeah.
Thank you, Ma. So now let's move on to Midnight Mind and your collaboration with your husband and the creation of this video, which is also out there and that people can check out. But talk about the song.
Absolutely. When I started working with Modern English, I wanted to pave the way for that album. And to pave the way, I wanted to create something that would be an encompassing of what I feel I am, both as a filmmaker, but especially as a musician. And Midnight Mind is my attempt to encapsulate my past and hopefully a little bit of my future moving forward with how I look at symbolism and poetry, the synthesis of amazing musical layers and also how visuals can merge with that. And working on Midnight Mind, I don't know, I think you're so brilliant to have put the work that you did at the beginning of the show with that emphasis on love, Artie, because in the expansion mod, One of the biggest key phrases is love always. And so if you listen to Midnight Mind until the very end, you'll hear me whisper love always. And that's such a huge part of my core with creation, is to look for healing and to look for accountability, responsibility, but always love. And Midnight Mind is a look at how we can face adversity, to face truly painful moments. And I was facing a couple of those things, and my friends were losing people that I loved at that period of time when I was writing the song. How do we face the darkness and find the stars? How do we redefine pain? And can we turn it into something beautiful? Can we produce that magical alchemy like you do with your magic? How can we improve a desperate situation? And sometimes we can reach out to people and they can lift us up. Sometimes we have to lift ourselves up and be a strength for other people, or at least attempt to be that. And Midnight Mind, I brought Jeff in there to provide that balance. He speaks a little bit of German. If people listen to the song, they're like, what is that? That's the German language, because I think we have so many miscommunications between each other, and I'm fascinated by the idea of trying to find connection when there's something in between, a veil that you need to push beyond to find truth and to find community and connection. And I think that people have been resonating with it a bit. We've won some awards, the Best Music Video Award at Imagine This Women's International in Brooklyn, and the Imaginarium Award in Louisville, Kentucky, and we just went to Moscow. And I'm very, very, very gratified that people are finding a little bit of value in the song and in the music video. So thank you for talking about it and for asking me.
Great.
The song we just played has been winning a number of Best Music Video awards. How about talking about that, Mara?
Sure. Yeah, I come from both a musical and video and stage background, and I worked on being a director at pretty young age. I think about 15 or 16, I started to direct some Shakespearean things back in the day. And when I created Midnight Mind, I really wanted to direct a short film to go along with it. And I've always been inspired by that age of the music video. I think it's so special. We don't get that as much these days, but luckily with YouTube, there's still innovation and creation. So I love being a part of that. And it took actually about a year and a half, maybe 2 years to shoot, to write, to put together. And I directed that. I shot most of it, although J. Jeff Ungar obviously features in the video for those of you who see it a little bit. And I'm in there. And I'm so thrilled and honored that when we reached out to these film festivals and submitted, that not only have we been getting selected, we have a really amazing ratio of actually receiving that Best Music Video Award from these film festivals that we submit to. I would like to do a special shout out to the Imagine This Women's International. We've won several awards, but they did such a particularly beautiful job at honoring people from across different spectrums in this field. And they do such great work. The two ladies that run it, they're heroines to me. And I was very, very, very touched and gratified that we would win there. And of course, all of the awards mean the world to us. And at the end of the day, I guess it can't be about awards when you're trying to talk about love and hope. But it sure doesn't hurt to make you feel encouraged.
Not at all. Not at all. And sometimes it propagates it. So if not for the awards, maybe somebody might not have heard about it and not have been touched by it. And when you do talk about love, without the award, you might not have gotten that. So I would never feel afraid to talk about the fact that you've won awards. That's a good thing. So congratulations. There's a song on a number of songs that you sent me. And my wife and I were listening to it last night. And I kind of, I said, well, it really doesn't fit in with the concept, Catskills Cafe, sort of folk Americana music. Your music is certainly a lot different, aside from the Celtic thing we played earlier. But the song is Sumus, S-U-M-U-S. My wife put headphones on and was just sort of jumping around with it, loving this thing. And I said, you really do like it. And she said, I love it. So, and she wanted to know what instruments were being played on that song. I'm going to play it for folks, but what were the instruments?
The instruments
or instrument? I don't even know.
it's all kinds of stuff. That one is this sort of hybrid of digital things and physical things. I really love bringing in true physical things into environments. So some of the sounds are actually me like rubbing sticks together. They're me moving bowls around and sampling that. They are all kinds of creative, different ways of creating odd textures and sounds. And then there's sort of digital ways of sampling that and playing that back. And you have, I think didgeridoo is in there. There's a little bit of violin and of course, tons and tons of different vocal layers. I like to play male sometimes when I do vocals. And so you might hear something that sounds like a different person, but it never is with my stuff. Unless I say that's Jeff or that's Rose, it's always me, even if it sounds like a male or something like that. I like doing that as well. So I'm so excited that she enjoys it. That rocks.
You're even more interesting than I thought you were. Let me play this tune for folks. Is that how you say it? Sumus?
Sumus. It means I am, yeah, in Latin.
Ah, okay. So here's Sumus with Mara Katria.
Yum,
Once again, Malika Trio with Sumas. And if you want to learn more about this incredible artist, check her website out. It's malikatria.com. And there's lots of information there about all of the things we've been talking about. I know we're going to get cut off any second via Zoom. So I want to thank you so much, Mara, and hope we get to meet in person as soon as this craziness is over. You're not that far 100%. Away. Maybe you can stop up here one of these days. Who knows? Mara, thank you again. 100%. And we'll see you down the line. Enjoy. Bye-bye now.
You enjoy too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it. Mara Katria, just an incredible artist who knows where she's going, has a definite plan, and seems to be getting there. So happy to talk with her because she's a real spirit and quite articulate, I must say. Hey, you guys, thanks so much for listening to this special episode of Mostly Folk. And I do hope that you join me again next time wherever you are, and I'll be here. This is Audie Martello, hoping you have a fantastic day. And I'll see you back here next time for another episode of Mostly Folk.